The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
In U.S. politics, President Biden and former President Trump have agreed to two general election debates. Word of the highly anticipated face-offs comes as former President Trump's legal troubles have him tied up in court, and a new mixed inflation report renews scrutiny of President Biden's handling of the economy.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, well, good afternoon. It's good to be back once again, man. We got 3 hours to hang out. Thanks for being here. I am looking forward to it. And we have got a lot to get into today. Cannot wait to get plugged in. Before I get to any news, Maggie, I got to ask you a question. I didn't ask you this, and if I had to bet, my answer to the question I'm about to throw you is probably no, you don't. But here's the question. Do you watch or listen to true crime podcasts?
I do not.
Yeah, I kind of thought you didn't. I never asked you that before.
I do not. I had a number of girlfriends in the past who were obsessed with true crime podcasts. And I found that it just repelled me because I realized over time they were like really anxious and paranoid people. Like they would say stuff about people. I'd be like, I don't think that guy is trying to harm anyone. You know, like.
We'll talk about it coming up. Here's the question and we'll throw out and we'll look at it. Because I have my own theory and I have my own reaction to it too as I watched it.
Yeah.
Is it okay to watch true crime? And on the surface, you're saying, of course. Is it okay to watch the tragedy, the horror, the violence that was perpetrated against another human being when somebody's actually profiting off it? They're making money on it. Mm-hmm. This is a genre that one of the top genres in podcasting. And for some reason, women love it. I mean, they really do. My wife has it on all the time, you know, and so does Mike Kendall, my former colleague here, or former. He says, yeah, my wife watches that too.
I mean,
my wife will kill me. She doesn't have it on all the time.
No.
But whenever it's on, I'm like, who's killing who today? Right?
Oh my gosh.
You're watching murder? I mean, it's like, it does nothing for me, you know?
I mean, I like a good mystery, yes, but I don't know. I tend, like, if I'm going to fill my brain with stuff in my off time, I try to, like, aim up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Instead of, like, filling it with all kinds of, like, weird. I don't know. I just think it's weird.
We'll talk about it right after the chat, but I'd love to hear from you. Kevin Turley's going to be stopping by. I always enjoy his perspective. We'll plug into that. So if your wife or girlfriend is into it, or ladies, if you watch it, I want to know why, and we'll just take a look at it. It'd be an interesting conversation. I don't know what it is that makes it resonate so powerfully. When I asked my wife, Kathy, about it, she says, well, you know, I actually like to see how crimes are solved. She's more intrigued, not so much at the gratuitous violence or the horror, but she just likes the investigation and the process. How, you know, it is pretty amazing when an officer comes upon a scene and they can track down from the smallest clue the person that's behind it. Somehow get motive. It's pretty amazing. We'll also talk a little bit about deliverance from lust if you're struggling with that. We'll even speak to a former porn actress who is going to share her conversion story. Amazing story of God's grace. The greater the sinner, the greater the right you have to God's mercy. That's just some of what we are getting into today. A couple of big feast days, St. Simon Stock, Brown Scapular, St. Gianna Mola, heroic woman who gave her life for her child. So let's dive into some of it right now. Let's talk what's going on in your world right now. President Biden and President Trump, as we mentioned yesterday, are going to hold debates next month. They're one's in September. And again, these are really early, right? But most of the reporting been made about it. Looks like Biden took the initiative yesterday. Trump already had called for debates. He had a big slogan out there, anytime, anywhere, you know, or anywhere, anytime, however he had it worded. It's something that Biden laughed at when a reporter asked him about it. So should be fiery. I think these are going to get record ratings. The president said that he said, look, Donald lost two debates to me in 2020. Since then, he hasn't shown up for a debate. Now he's acting like he wants to debate me again. Well, make my day, pal. You know, it's like, and I said yesterday, I felt like I'm on a, you know, I'm in my schoolyard somewhere and a bunch of kids. I'll see you on the playground if you show up. You know, that's the whole thing now. If you show up, the debates are outside of the ones that are typically set up by the Commission on Presidential Debates. They'll be moderated by CNN and ABC, respectively. There's a little bit of bias with those particular networks, I would see. But I don't know if you watched any of the past debates between Trump and Biden, saying they were intense. is an understatement. KTVB TV in Boise will fill you in on what you might expect.
Someday you're going to have to explain why.
The stage is set for a long-awaited showdown between President Biden and former President Trump, both candidates agreeing to two debates on June 27th and September 10th. The details rolling out within hours of President Biden issuing this challenge.
Donald Trump lost two debates to me in 2020. Since then, he hadn't shown up for debate. Now he's acting like he wants to debate me again. Well, make my day, pal.
Mr. Trump, who has repeatedly said he would debate anytime, anywhere, quickly agreed to the debates, adding, let's get ready to rumble, and saying on the Hugh Hewitt show.
I really think he has to debate. He might as well get it over with. Probably should do it early so that he can, you know, he's not going to get any better.
No, that's but June and September is great.
Every day is a down factor for him.
In a break from tradition, the candidates going around the Commission on Presidential Debates to instead face off with no live audience in a TV studio. First up, CNN.
I think we're in such a momentous moment, and I think there's questions about both of these candidates' capabilities.
It will be a ratings getter, that's for sure. I'm going to watch, right? I'll break it down for you. You know, they have the different strategies this time. They're going to have the mic of the person not answering the question off. It might be good. You know, I think President Trump hurt himself debating Biden by, you know, coming at him full barrels in that first debate. And some of the stuff he said about Hunter and addiction. I mean, won him points, won the Biden campaign some points. But, yeah, maybe let them make their cases. We'll see what happens. There's a lot of other things they're going to be doing, too. But we'll continue to follow it. But it will be here before you know it. While I was broadcasting yesterday, I've got a couple monitors on in the studio here and different news feeds streaming at me. The Prime Minister of Slovakia, he was shot in an assassination attempt yesterday. His name's Robert Fico. And he started out his political career as a leftist, but has become more conservative as time has gone on. He just finished a government meeting in Handlova, was walking back to his car, and all of a sudden these shots rang out, five of them. He made it through surgery, and he is actually expected to survive. There's a suspect that's been detained. There are no details on his identity, but it was frightening news. Took over all of Europe, this assassination attempt, and the Today Show reported on it. They'll fill you in. Listen to this.
Europe is shaken after an assassination attempt in broad daylight on Slovakia's prime minister, striking Robert Fico in the stomach, his security rushing to help him get away, and a possible glimpse of the shooter. Authorities said an arrest was made moments later. The deputy prime minister reassuring the public outside the hospital, saying the doctors have managed to stabilize his condition, but the situation is really serious. President Biden calling the incident a horrific act of violence. Slovakia's interior minister saying it was politically motivated. Fico's politics are divisive, and he's a supporter of Russia and its war against Ukraine. And protests have erupted across the nation after Fico's plan to put the state broadcaster under government control.
So yeah, that may be the theory behind it. And again, his name's Fico. Glad for that point of clarification. He aligned himself with the Hungarian leader, Viktor Orban, who is controversial throughout Europe because of his socially conservative policies and because of his lack of support to Ukraine in their fight against Russia. Who would take him out? I don't know. I'm sure we'll find out in the days ahead. Speaking of Russia, though, the Wall Street Journal was reporting that Russia launched a satellite into space in February of, I think it was 2022. Here's the thing, and the reason I'm talking about it now, I mean, this report came out just recently, but that satellite is designed to test components for a potential anti-satellite weapon that would carry a nuclear device. And that's according to our own government officials. If Russia was to set off that weapon, it would destroy thousands of satellites in low Earth orbit with a nuclear blast. And it would blind the U.S. It would blind our military. It would cripple, you know, a whole lot of other things, too, you know, navigation, internet, and things like that for a lot of people. But the Kremlin claims that the satellite is just doing research, right? Remember when they all amassed on the border of Ukraine before they went in February 24th? We're just doing exercises. That's all. There's nothing to see here. Move along, right? I don't trust a word they say, and this is really a problem. The next frontier for war is space. But, you know, you set off a bomb up there, Imagine what that's going to do to the space station. Imagine the debris that's going to rain down. Putin said this, look, our position's clear and transparent. We've always been categorically against and now against the placement of nuclear weapons in space. I wish I could believe him. Doesn't mean he won't use them at some point in the future, right? We'll see what happens. One or two more stories here I just find kind of off the radar, but I think they're worth talking about. Another bridge got hit. Did you hear about this? We had that Scott Keyes Bridge that went down in Baltimore. And then we had another one in New York like the week after. I never heard of so many bridges getting hit, right? It's like when I started to hear about trains derailing. It's like, I never heard of so many trains derailing. And maybe it was just being reported on. But there was a tugboat pushing a fuel barge, and it slammed into a pier. It was part of a bridge down in Pelican Island. It connects Pelican Island to Galveston, Texas. This happened yesterday. And nobody was injured. One man did fall overboard. It's also good that the waterway isn't used that much, but there was a fuel spill that the water crews had to clean up. But the bridge is now in serious need of repair. You might notice there's been a lot of news about our nation's infrastructure under threat. I've talked about it. CBS News Texas will tell you about this bridge in Galveston and what went down.
A boat crashing into a bridge, and this time this is in South Texas. A fuel barge hitting the only bridge connecting Pelican Island to the city of Galveston. Access to that island still limited this morning as a result of all of this.
Almost 24 hours later, and people are not allowed to enter the island, but people were allowed to evacuate from the island late last night. The barge hit Pelican Island Causeway around 10 a.m. Wednesday, and two workers had to be rescued. The whole incident was a reminder of what happened in Baltimore in March when the Key Bridge collapsed and six people were killed. Officials in Galveston say the Causeway Bridge is old and it's lucky things weren't worse.
Yeah, well, thank God for that. They said also the current was pretty bad. The tide was high. The barge pilot said, I just lost it. So we'll see. Anomalies, I hope. I hope there's nothing more to that, but I'm just putting it on your radar. One final story here. The Pope giving an admonition to some American universities. That'll get your attention, right? He spoke to members of a higher education foundation in Barcelona, and the Pope said some universities are just too liberal, and they do not place enough emphasis on their students into the whole people. And he said some universities I know in America that are too liberal and only seek to train technicians and specialists. They forget that they have to form men and women, people of integrity who try to get the best of themselves in the service to which God calls them, he said. He said, knowing that they're pilgrims, that reality is a journey towards a goal that surpasses reality. I good for him. Let's call him out, right? Thank you, Your Holiness. Why not? And I think he's right. I think some of these universities in this country, way too liberal. Hey, there's an act in Congress called the SAVE Act. It would require all voters in the United States to show that they fulfill a basic requirement to be eligible to vote. You know, if you prove you're a citizen in this country, it's the most basic requirement to participate in the political process of any, you know, country, state, or municipality. You got to be a citizen, right? You got to, can't come from China and say, I want to vote in the election. Can't come from Mexico and say, you want to vote in the election. I couldn't do that. Couldn't go to another country and say, hey, Drew Mariani's here. Can I vote in your election? They'd laugh me across the border. So, you know, let's say you're a citizen, I don't know, of the state of Illinois. You can't cross the border, go vote in a Wisconsin election or an Indiana election, right? You can't go to neighboring states. It's just basic knowledge. It makes sense. So showing that each person who comes to vote, that they fulfill that basic requirement, I think is a minimum for us. Unfortunately, this bill, the SAVE Act, it's going to face opposition in the Senate where it originated. And it comes as the Department of Homeland Security announced that they're starting a pilot program to give IDs, identification cards, to illegal immigrants. They want to give documentation to undocumented migrants. So 10,000 of these cards are going to be given out in the Houston and Atlanta area. And the Department of Homeland Security says that the paper documents that they give out, well, they're easily lost or degraded. So these documents are going to be easier to track. And conservatives, they believe that this is a crack in the door, a foot in the door, a move to get them federal identification cards that can be easily used for things like voting. And Hans von Spakovsky is going to be stopping by in a quick moment. He'll fill you in on it. Let me just share with you right now the new RNC chair, Michael Watley, he told Fox News and the Republican Party, he said, look, they're committed to making sure there is election integrity this coming election. So here's the position of the Republicans on this. Listen.
We are now in our fourth year of the border invasion, Laura. The only thing they are doing is keeping that conveyor belt smoothly running, bringing illegal aliens from outside the country into the country. And if they can't do it by land, what do, Laura? They send airplanes to foreign countries like Haiti, fill them up with illegals, and then fly them into swing states. The invasion is not going to stop for 1 second, 1 minute, 1 hour. In fact, just 2 days ago, every Democrat in the House, everyone unanimously voted to give illegal aliens representation in allotting congressional seats and electoral college votes.
Oh, yeah.
That's how open borders they are.
And we have to talk about that. Congressional districts and the electoral college. When they cross the border, there's video tapes saying, thank you, Joe Biden. Thank you very much, Joe Biden. You know, they feel like they've been invited to come here. And you know, you think about, why would we do this? Why would we let so many? I didn't share the story with you. I don't have time right now about how many gotaways that have just been reported. I mean, it's off the charts. If I get time, maybe I can run that for you. But I want to get to Hans. He's a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, a former member of the Federal Election Commission and the author of Our Broken Elections. Always good to talk with Mr. Hans von Spakovsky. Hey, Hans, welcome back. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me. Hey, this is a very hot topic right now because, Drew, I don't know if you know this, but I literally, an hour ago, got back from the U.S. House of Representatives as a witness in a hearing that the House Administration Committee was having on the problem of aliens illegally registering and voting in our elections.
Wow. So what came out of that? What went down?
According to the Democratic members of the committee, this never happens. Wow. And any efforts to try to prevent it from happening are just another effort to suppress the vote. And what was funny about it was I in my testimony mentioned very specific examples of aliens who have been found to have both registered and voted. Wow. And it was like they held their hands over their ears and blocked it when I was talking about it because they kept saying, oh, there's just no evidence that this ever happens.
Yeah. It's crazy. They gaslight.
It is.
You know, it's so frustrating. It really is. When I hear that kind of thing that goes down, why your opinion on this, Tim? Why the open borders? Why the IDs? Is it, you know, in terms of big picture, an opportunity to influence the electoral college, congressional districts? I mean, is this all about voting, getting a base for the Democratic Party?
Oh yes, it is. Both because they assume that they don't want anything, even though it's illegal,
yeah,
for aliens to register and vote in federal elections. They don't want anything in place that will actually prevent it, help states stop it, wow, detect it, because they believe those votes will help them. They also, you know, the whole reason they opposed a citizenship question on the 2020 census was because they know that when you include aliens in the population count and then you use that for apportionment, right? Yeah. Figuring out how many members of the U.S. House every state has, the more illegal aliens in a state like California, the more representatives they get in Congress.
That's insane. That's wild. Makes perfect sense, doesn't it? Yeah, we're not going to do anything. The president can sign an executive order and shut the spigot, but of course we're not seeing that. And it makes sense if you can influence your base. Do we know how many non-citizens are actually voting? Is there any assessment on that? Any estimates?
Well, there's a couple of studies that have been done about this, and boy, I feel sorry for the professors who did it because they were relentlessly attacked by the left. A couple of years ago, several professors did a study based on survey information that had been filled out by 30,000-something voters. And a certain percentage of those voters actually admitted that they not only had registered, but also that they had voted. And based on that study, The professors actually estimated that in the 2008 election, you know, when Barack Obama was elected, yeah, that 6.4% of the aliens in the country actually voted in that election.
Oh my gosh.
So that kind of gives you a potential of the numbers involved.
That's wild. Now, it's stunning. It's frustrating. It's wrong on so many different levels. Yet you'll hear, ICE and others say, you know what, the Department of Homeland Security, they claim that this program is simply to modernize documentation that's, you know, provided to these non-citizens. It's not about voting. It's about, you know, getting a photograph and biographic identificators, and this is going to help streamline the process of checking in and scheduling and reporting and verifying identities in the field. And it sounds great. What do you make of that argument that this is a pilot program and, this is going to help us become more efficient?
Well, I just don't believe that. The whole point of states pushing to give all kinds of ID documents and other things to aliens who are here illegally is to make it easier for them to stay here and harder for us to deport them. I mean, that is what's going on here. I mean, look, one of the reasons that the left doesn't want any kind of checks on people registering to vote, no kind of verification, is because if you look at the I-9 form, that's the form every employer has to fill out on you when you're a potential employee, right? This is a federal requirement. You have to prove you're a U.S. citizen, and you have to prove your identity. Well, guess what one of the documents is that's listed in that federal form that you can use to prove your identity?
What's that?
A voter registration card.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I saw a piece the other day on the news, a couple of days ago, about how if you have this if you have this card, it makes it very easy to register to vote.
Yes,
and
of course.
You know, we want honest and we want free elections in this country, and you know, that's another form of really manipulation. What happens, Hans, when people cross the border? I mean, how do they know whether they're from Haiti or a Venezuelan prison, or they're from El Salvador, or they're just some Mexican, father who wants to feed his family? Do the people who cross the border have to prove who they are and what their country of origin is?
No, they don't have to prove anything. They come across with no documentation. So, you know, this administration actually has claimed, oh, they verify everybody came across. That is a complete and total lie, because these aliens come across usually, like I said, with no documentation. So if they say they're from Mexico as opposed to Venezuela, El Salvador, and they give a particular name, Border Patrol officials have absolutely no way to check that, and they certainly have no ability to verify or check into their backgrounds and see whether, for example, they're released criminals.
Wow, unbelievable. Do you have concerns about how many Chinese migrants there are? There was a report earlier today. I didn't get a chance to share it with everyone, just about the new border data. It shows that this came out, I think, from the U.S. Customs Border Protection, the CBP. They said there was 670, almost 671,000 gotaways. That's quintuple what the agency had documented back in 2020 under the former president, Donald Trump, when he was in the White House. So it almost seems like this is a plan. Like, okay, don't arrest anybody. Let's keep the borders open. I have so many concerns in terms of, national security, drugs, a lot of the other things that are coming across the border. But what do you make of those particular numbers, and as well as some of these nations? I mean, we have gotten people on the terror watch list, but even China now, those numbers are way, way up.
Well, what's happened is the world has looked and seen that it is a deliberate, intentional, knowing policy of the Biden administration to open up the southern border. Yeah. So anyone who thinks that it's only Mexicans fleeing Mexico coming across, that is wrong. Individuals trying to get into the United States, including terrorists from the Middle East and elsewhere, are all headed to Mexico because from there it's extremely easy to get across the border. And that includes the Chinese getting folks into this country. And don't forget, I think something like 85% of the fentanyl, all of the chemicals needed to make fentanyl, are produced where? In Red China.
Yeah, that's right.
And where do they ship almost all of it to? Mexico.
Yep.
Where the cartels then smuggle it across the border. That is a deliberate policy by the Chinese government. They want America flooded with drugs that get our young people hooked and killed. And anybody thinks I'm exaggerating, I'm sorry. How do you explain the fact that the Chinese are producing all this fentanyl and shipping it to, of all places, to Mexico?
Yeah, no. They're at war with us, undeclared, but you see it from cyber espionage to hacking to fentanyl to so many other things. Dr. Paul is listening to us in Los Angeles, California. Doctor, I only have about a minute or so for you, but go right ahead. You're on the air with Hans von Spakovsky.
Sure, I'll be as brief as possible because there are many lawsuits that were happening that they cannot ask the citizens to prove the ID. That's number one. And also the absentee mail ballots, we get flooded in Los Angeles. No. It's so tempting, but we have to go in person and vote.
Yeah. Thank you, Doctor. Hans, what do you think about early voting, absentee voting, all this mail that's happening? I mean, I'm all about in-person voting. It'd be great. Maybe have multiple days. But I think, gosh, it's so tempting to somehow figure out a way to rig this thing. But your thoughts on it?
Well, absentee voting is the riskiest way to vote. A number of years ago, there was a law enforcement report released down in Florida that said absentee ballots are the tool of choice of vote thieves. And they're absolutely right about that. Early voting, look, if it's being done in person, if you have to show an ID to vote, I don't have a problem with that. But I have a problem when early voting extends more than 2 weeks before election day. When you're going out a month and a half, 2 months, that is, to me, problematic and is not a good idea, especially during primary campaigns. When candidates drop out right before election day.
And there's always bombshells and things that you say, oh, I wish I knew that before I voted. You know, even the Hunter Biden laptop scandal was buried for a while. But if people knew that, they said might have changed things. But, you know, the early voting, it's too late to change your mind. Hey, your books are Broken Elections and Who's Counting. How can people get them? They're available where?
It's still available, I think, on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Right. Check those books out. Check out Hans von Spakovsky, Spakovsky. Great to have you with me, Hans. We'll talk, I'm sure, in the not too distant future. Thanks for making time for us.
Sure thing. Anytime.
You got it. All right. I got to take a short pause here. When we come back, we'll change gears. All right. We need to do that. We could talk an hour and a half on that topic. I want you to be aware of it, though. I'm putting it on your radar as to what's happening. House divided we are. SAVE Act only makes sense. And you see the opposition to it. When we come back, I'm going to talk to you about a piece of spiritual armor, something that could have eternal ramifications for you. That straight ahead.
Your news, the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Your news now.
The Brown Scapular is one of the most approved and encouraged devotions in the church. Venerable Pius XII said, "It is a sign and guarantee of the protection of Mary, not in small things, but in acquiring eternal life." St. John Paul II said, "It is a synthesis of Carmelite spirituality," and added, "I too have worn the scapular of Carmel over my heart for a long time, out of my love for our common heavenly mother, whose protection I constantly experience."
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, I want to get you plugged into what I like to call spiritual armor, an insurance policy for you. And that's the Brown Scapular. Today is a great day. According to tradition, on July 16th, 1251, Our Lady, the Blessed Virgin Mary, appeared to St. Simon. He was a Carmelite friar, gave him the Brown Scapular. And she said to him, "Receive, my beloved son, this habit of thy order. Whoever dies wearing this cloth shall never suffer the fires of hell." And that's such a promise, right? It's a guarantee of Our Lady's intercession at the hour of her death. And this is not just a piece of clothing. And I want to talk a little bit about it today. Sister Sean Pauline's going to be stopping by. We'll get her take on this. This is a sign of devotion to the Mother of God. If you're not wearing one, I'm telling you, get a scapular. We'll talk all about the secrets, the promises that were given into the Sabbatine privilege. You know, John Paul II had profound devotion to it, and he wore it throughout his life. And he also spoke about the protection of the spiritual benefits it brought to him. St. Alphonse Liguori, St. Therese of Lisieux, so many of the greats, they wore it, and so many miracles have been attributed to it. The brown scapular is not a magic amulet. I want to make sure I get that out there before we talk about it. It's a blessing. It's a sacramental and a gift from heaven. And I invited to join us today Sister Pauline of Carmel. She's the directress of novices for the Carmelite Sisters of the Most Sacred Heart of Los Angeles. They run the Sacred Heart Retreat Center in Alhambra. And Sister Sean Pauline attended Franciscan U. I just found that out from one of my producers here. Entered the Carmelites in 2003, made her final vows in 12, and she's here today, very excited to share with you this beautiful gift. Sister, good afternoon.
Hi, it's so nice to be with you all today. Thank you for inviting us.
Well, thank you for saying yes. When I saw today was the anniversary of the day that St. Simon Stock received the brown scapular, I thought we really should talk about this. And I tried to give a snapshot of the history, but bring us back in time. Introduce those who are listening to this great gift that heaven has given to us and put into perspective the promises and so much more.
Sure. Well, it'd be wonderful to start off by saying it's beautiful to know he received this image of Our Lady, this vision of her, actually on July 16th. So that was in, as you beautifully described in the intro, in 1251. And so today, Carmelites celebrate him and his feast. So this is the day we honor him and his spiritual fatherhood to our order and his intercession. And so basically at that time in the church, things were really difficult to kind of start a new order. And there were multiple other mendicant orders, like orders that were asking for people to help them survive on donations and asking for support. So there was a lot of difficulty. And there was also the period of the plague in Europe. There's a lot of hardship that Simon Stock was facing as the superior general of the order at that time. And so he went to Our Lady and said, please, I need your help. I need your help. And she appears to him in this beautiful moment of protection and love and care over the whole order, and says she actually held the scapular to him. And so for your listeners, the word scapular is from the Latin scapula. It's actually that part of our collarbone, the scapula. And we call it that because we wear it over our shoulders in that particular spot on the body. And it was traditionally like an apron. And then all of a sudden she appears to him and holds the apron out and says, this is the garment. This is, just as you so beautifully quoted her, anyone who dies clothed with this habit shall be preserved from eternal fire. And she kind of promises this love and protection of the order in the clothing of the scapular. It's this beautiful moment of her habit that she gives to us. And she's also wearing the same habit in that image. And Mary has showed up multiple times actually wearing that same habit in other apparitions, which I'd love to share with you about more, too. That's a little bit of a snapshot. She basically came and kind of came to the rescue and like, it's okay. Everything's going to be fine. This is my order. You're good.
I love it. Two things. And I do want to talk about some of those other apparitions. I know Fatima was one of those.
Yeah, Our Lady of Fatima particularly.
Before we do that, I want to make sure, like, I'm a big believer in sacramentals. Yeah. I have in my pocket a rosary around my neck right now. I am wearing a brown scapular. I've got a St. Benedict medal. You know, I believe in blessed water and salt and all these great treasures that we have within our church, and Satan, of course, hates them. But you know, sometimes people look at these things like they're an amulet, a magic rabbit foot. You know, it's like, if I die wearing this, then I'm going to go directly. So I'm going to keep it on me, even though I'm, you know, breaking every commandment there is possible. Put that into perspective, if we could. And what did Our Lady mean by that? Because look, there are promises to Sacred Heart devotion, to Divine Mercy devotion. There's lots of great promises for those at the hour of death. This is a powerhouse one, and I know all the great saints love this.
Right, right. And also you all mentioned in the intro about St. John Paul II, you know, when he was shot, it was Our Lady of Fatima's feast day, and he told the surgeons, do not take the scapular off.
Love it.
Don't take it off of me. Right, so it was this powerful intercession of Our Lady and promise of love to the people. But, you know, just like all things, this is a sacramental that's meant to encourage faith and love and devotion to Jesus, her son. and to be faithful to his commandments and to love him, to know him, to reverence him. And so our lives have to be lived in a way that reverences that. Right? So this can't be a good luck charm. It's actually just, like you said, it's armor for the battle. It's a piece of the clothing that Our Lady wore, that we wear. And I think this is a really fun part of the history too, just for fun. Like, the reason that it became such small little pieces is the tradition holds that everybody found out about this beautiful vision and this beautiful promise that Mary gave to the Carmelite order. And people, the friars were walking around in England and people were like trying to rip off pieces of the habit because they wanted a part of that promise. So then they said, okay, we better start making these little mini scapulars for people to wear because they're taking apart our habits, and that's not okay. So it's a really fun traditional story that just been passed down through the ages. So that's where the little scapular comes from. It's like wearing a little piece of that habit for anybody that wants it. And it's meant to encourage faith. It can't be a good luck charm, or it can't be something that we think of as magical, like, oh, my ticket to heaven. Like, that's ridiculous. We know that we don't believe that. We do not believe that we're like saved by faith alone. Like, we believe we are saved by the beautiful work that we have in our church and the offering of our lives as beautiful, faithful Christians. And these symbols and signs of the faith, they help us. They encourage us to be faithful. And yeah, you just kind of feel this spiritual power from them in your heart and protection from Mary when you wear it with faith.
Yeah,
right?
No, I totally agree with you. And I think if you do wear the scapular, you know, it's also a reminder of your commitment to our Lady. It draws you close to her. And, you know, that promise that you gave, I believe it in this respect. I believe at the hour of death, she'll be our advocate. She'll be interceding for us. She will be, even throughout our lives, you know, and it's such a great, great promise. You know, brown scapular isn't just a piece of clothing. It's really it's a personal sign for me of devotion to Our Lady. I've consecrated myself to her. It's a mini habit. It's a reminder to grow in holiness. Pope, I think it was Pius XII, called a sign of consecration to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. So if you don't have it, get one on. But she appeared with this, you know, not only to Simon Stock, what other apparitions? Of course, you were mentioning Fatima. Maybe unpack that.
Sure. So the last apparition of Fatima is like with the day the sun danced. You know, if you remember the story, and the children were watching and seeing what was being revealed. And the last image, Mary came and dressed, she was dressed in the brown habit of Our Lady Mount Carmel and holding the scapular. And Lucia, having seen that, then it impressed upon her deeply, like, that will be the type of sister I will want to be. Very interesting, later, fast forward in her life, she entered another congregation, but always asked and desired to be a Carmelite. Eventually, she wrote to the Pope asking, I want to be a Carmelite, and my community is not really letting me leave, so could you help? And so the Holy Father interceded on her behalf so she could become a Carmelite. Very, very interesting part of her story. But I feel that is the validity of the image. Like, she wanted and knew that was the habit Mary was wearing in that last apparition, and she felt that that was the order that she should be a part of. And you see this deep connection there with Our Lady of Fatima, and then, as we already mentioned, with St. John Paul II, this incredible protection of Our Lady, particularly through that intercession. And his connection to Carmel, I'm not sure if your listeners might know this, but he also wanted to be a Carmelite. He did inquire with the Carmelites during the period of history of World War II, and they said, no, you can't be a Carmelite right now because of the war. We're not accepting anyone. And so that's when he turned away. He had great devotion. He wrote his doctoral thesis on St. John of the Cross, and loved Carmelite spirituality and was Carmelite through and through. I'd like to say his blood ran brown.
You're not prejudiced, are you?
No, and I'm actually named after him. So I have a deep, deep love of St. John Paul II. My name, Sean Pauline, is after John Paul II. So his great, great devotion and motto, all of that love of Our Lady is really centered and rooted in his Carmelite devotion.
Yep.
As Mary, this is her order. We do say that Carmel is Mary's order from the very beginning. We were originally the brothers of Our Lady of Mount Carmel, by the first ones that founded our order on Mount Carmel and Haifa in the Holy Land.
Yeah, so
lots of fun history there around the scapular.
Well, sister, stay with me for a moment. When I come back, maybe we can take a few phone calls. I'd love to hear your story. I'd like to hear what led you to this, to the Carmelites of all. If you want to join us, I have sister for just a few moments. Maybe you wear the scapular. You know, maybe you're just learning about it. What do you need? Do you have to be somehow enrolled? Does that make a difference? Should a scapular be blessed? What do you do with your old broken ones? Whatever your questions are, we can talk about them all. I'll open the phone for you. And of course, the Chaplet of Divine Mercy is about 15 minutes away. We'll pray for that too. But if you want to get in, good time to do it. The number is 888-914-9149. You can call now. That's 888-914-9149.
The Drew Mariani Show. Connected. Connected. Relevant Radio.
You can support Relevant Radio in many ways. Joining a giving society, donating a vehicle you don't need anymore, and now donating a piece of land or other real estate. Donate now at relevantradio.com/property.
Pray, hope, and don't worry. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, coming up next.
Now, here's a question for you. What did St. Teresa of Lisieux, St. Alphonse Liguori, St. John Paul II have in common? If you've been listening, you probably know the answer, right? They wore the brown scapular. One of many, many saints. I hope you're wearing it. We're all called to the same holiness, the same sanctity. You know, lots of stories of miraculous intercession of Our Lady for those who wear it. There was a story, and I'll have to get some verification from Sister Charlotte Pauline whether or not this is a valid story or not. There was a Carmelite priest, his name was Father John McGowan, who was in a very severe car accident. The car was completely crushed, and everyone thought, oh my gosh, he's dead, all right? No one could survive this. He walked away, they say, with only minor injuries. And what did he do? He attributed his miraculous escape to the protection of the brown scapular. And we hear this about people who've survived fires and all sorts of other things. The scapular comes with, you know, many promises. Again, Our Lady, this is her sign. I would strongly encourage you, if you're not enrolled, to get enrolled, to wear it faithfully, to live out its call to holiness, to trust in Mary's promise of her protection and her intercession. If you want to fall more deeply in love with our Lord, Our Lady will speed you down that path. I promise you that. I'm joined right now, as I said, by a woman who I really am enjoying talking to, Sister Shawn Pauline of Carmel. She's the directress of novices for the Carmelite Sisters of the Most Sacred Heart of Los Angeles. And Sister, let's go right to the phones. We'll grab a few quick calls for you. Lisa is sure. In Brookfield, Wisconsin. Hi, Lisa. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. My question is, do I need to be enrolled? Is there some prayer that the priest is supposed to say over the scapular before I wear it?
Good question. All right. Enrollment, Sister. What do we need to do?
That's a great question.
Just put it on or not?
Right, right. So out of devotion, anyone could put it on, but it is a formal type of enrollment in the scapular. And any priest could be able to bestow that blessing. And there's a little small ceremony. It's in the Book of Blessings and part of devotions and sacramentals of the church. So you could just approach the parish priest at any church to help you enroll in the brown scapular. But if you have a Carmelite community nearby, you could also have the Carmelite friars enroll you in the scapular as well. And actually, it's very interesting. Personally, I know that my first Holy Communion was the first time I was enrolled. And I think I was so focused on Holy Communion that I was, you know, as a child, I didn't realize I was actually being enrolled in the scapular. So it's a beautiful step of faith in the scapular. Like you said, we don't want it to just be a magical sign or something. Like, I actually want to understand this more. I want to know what the sacramental means. Yeah. It really behooves all of us to dive in a little deeper, learn about the devotion, enroll in it, and have a formal ceremony with the priest bestowing. Once you receive the enrollment, you're good. You don't have to go through the ceremony again. Like, let's say it breaks or you need another one. You're okay. You've already been officially enrolled. And so you could obviously have it blessed with holy water if you wanted to. Sure. But the privilege itself and the continued enrollment continues even after the wool dies away.
You're one and done. Get enrolled and that's it. And it's simple. It's not some long, arduous type. It's a beautiful prayer.
It's pretty fast.
And you put that scapular on. Maybe you got somebody who's dying. And maybe you have a loved one that's away from the faith, you know, ask them to wear it or put it on that loved one that might be approaching that threshold of new life. You know, it's such a beautiful sacramental and gift. Let's go to Oakland, Maine next. I love seeing Maine on the board. Jean, good afternoon.
Maine, how fun.
Hi, Jean.
Hey, Drew. Yes, hi.
tomorrow will be a year that my son has passed, and we prayed the Divine Mercy Chaplet over him.
Wow.
When we went out to see him in Vegas, it was a shock to my husband and I. And so at that last hour, we had the Maronite priest come and drop the scapular off to him because he didn't have one. And I'm struggling this past year. I'm struggling with that. And that would really help. Would really help me if I knew that scapular helped him to get
Gene,
to heaven.
Gene, be at peace. You know, God is love and mercy itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just you put your trust in him. And I'm sure the priest probably gave him last rites. But sister, maybe you speak to her about the promise that Our Lady did give for all those who quote this. And you have to trust in God's mercy in this moment.
Absolutely. And Gene, we really pray with you this day. It is a painful memorial, and you're doing great loving your son right now. And just that hope of a mother's heart to bestow on him your prayers, continuous prayers, is such a gift. And the mother's love that you're sharing, even with all of our listeners right now, is so beautiful. And so, be assured that Mary, that's part of the gift of this treasure of her love and protection. But even more so, like our host is just saying, that the gift of being be able to receive the sacraments and to have a priest present and to pray the chaplet of mercy. My goodness, your son was surrounded by everything you could possibly have to have hope in the mercy and love of our heavenly and good Father. So I agree. Just totally be at peace and know and trust that he is safe and at home with the Lord.
I hope I'm that lucky. You know, to have that scapular, to have the chaplet prayed at my bedside.
Indeed.
And I say
and
it all the time.
People don't even know about that.
The chaplet we pray every day here at the top of the hour in a few minutes. And the Lord's, you know, as you know, I mean, the Lord says, you know, he promised anybody who that chaplet is prayed for, you know, he'll come not as a just judge, but as a merciful Savior. And it's so critical we pray for those souls in that final hour, because that's when they need that grace, because Satan, that's his final hour, his final chance. Gene, we'll pray for you coming up in the chapel. We'll pray for your son, too. Okay, we'll pray for his soul.
Beautiful.
Margaret is in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hi, Margaret. You're on the air with Sister. Go right ahead.
Hi, Drew.
Hey.
I'm calling for the simple question.
Yeah.
What's the difference to wear a medal of Mary or the scapular?
Great question.
Yeah, it's a really great question.
So, sister, go ahead. This is your area.
Sure.
That's all you.
I love it. So the beautiful thing is, over the centuries, there have been, you know, certain allergies and difficulties, particularly the wool. It can be kind of scratchy. And so our original habits were made of pure wool. And over time, the church recognizes, well, maybe this obviously doesn't have to be a wool piece of clothing. There could be the same gift given if you were to wear a medal. And so traditionally, the church has a medal that has the Sacred Heart on one side and Our Lady of Mount Carmel on the other side. And that can also be in lieu of wearing the scapular, the wool scapular, again, worn around the neck, so it's like around the person, and it's a sign of that devotion, and that it is acceptable as another type of devotion of the same scapular privilege and blessing.
Let me just follow up for what Margaret said, because I'm wearing the scapular thing, it gets tangled, you know, it's in your other metal, you know, you're sleeping at night and it's hitting you in the face, whatever, right? It's like, can you trade it out for the metal, or does Our Lady want you to wear the cloth instead? I mean, if you can wear the cloth, should you do that?
Mary never told me that she was like really upset with the metal.
All right, sis, I'm with you.
You know, it's fine. Either one's fine. Cool. Acceptable.
Yeah,
truly.
I'm not a letter of the law guy.
No
shame. I'm not. You know, I look at God very differently than I once did, you know, and I'm not a letter of the law in that respect. I think God, if you show your devotion and love for Our Lady by wearing the medal with the rest of your medals, God bless you. You know, God's not going to say, oh, sorry, the prayers don't count. All right. So up next is Yorba Linda, California. Hi, Carl.
Hi, Drew. Thank you so much for taking my call. I carry on my wallet a scapular from my grandparents, which is over 75 years old.
Yep.
How beautiful.
And, but it's a red scapular, so I don't really know what is the difference between a red scapular and a traditional brown scapular.
So, sister, you know that the red scapular is the scapular of the Passion, right?
Mm-hmm.
From the Passion.
Yeah, and there's also a green scapular, a couple of different colors going on, and they all have
similar, like each one you'd want to kind of maybe do a little bit more research on the history of where the red and how it kind of got changed to, right? I mean, there's lots of different devotions of and different orders that obviously have similar devotions to Our Lady. So it can vary a little bit.
There's a red, there's a green, there's a blue, there's the brown. The red for you, though, Carl, is distinct because its focus is on the passion of Christ. It's intended to inspire devotion for his suffering and his death. It was founded by, it was revealed to a nun, Sister Apollonia, I can't remember the last name, Daughter of Charity in 1846. But you do a quick search for the red scapular, it'll fill you in. It's the scapular of the passion. Yeah. So, and there's many of these, the brown, the blue, the green, you know, as I said, et cetera. Yeah. Sister, I'm out of time. Thank you for your prayers. I'm counting on
them.
We're about to gather together around the nation to pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. So I will lift up your intentions along with mine, okay?
Thank you so much. And we thank St. John Paul II for the gift of making that devotion for the church come alive.
Now stay on the line, sister. I'm going to talk to you. And please say a prayer for my daughter, all right?
It's great.
She was baptized on this day. It is top of the hour. We'll pray together right after this short break. Join me for the Chaplet. I'll be right back.